Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Milan ended an 11-year wait for the Scudetto last season, closing out a dramatic title-winning campaign with just a 2-point margin of victory. So this is the dawn of a new era of Rossoneri dominance, or can the likes of Inter, Juve, or Jose Mourinho's Roma knock Pioli's men off the perch? With a new Serie A season just days away, anything can happen. But to help separate the contenders from the pretenders, I'm joined by Michael Lahoud and one of the voices of Paramount Plus's Serie A coverage, Dre Cordero. Calcio is back and Gigolasso begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Gigolasso. Thank you so much for being part of the family. YouTube.com/Gigolasso. Gigolasso pod on Twitter. We're nearly there to 20,000 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you so much. And thank you for the support throughout the summer. I am here to talk about Serie A, which you can exclusively watch on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports as our Serie A coverage begins this weekend. Fantastic stuff. It's your home for every Serie A match. Dre Cordero, how are you, brother?
My man, it's so good to speak with you again, to see you again, Michael. It's been a long time. Good to reconnect. Yeah. It's been a fun summer for me. I've been covering Inter Miami. It's my hometown team. I have this like emotional attachment to it, but I'm ready for Serie A to be back, baby. Three more sleeps and we go again.
Of course you're ready, my brother. And we are ready, of course. Michael Lahoud, how are you, bud?
I'm doing great. I even had to upgrade the shirt because it's Serie A, Italian fine dining and fine wearing. I'm with Dre. Cannot wait. This was a league that had so many surprises, so many storylines last season. Can't wait for another season.
Absolutely. I'm wearing my Ronaldo Fenomeno Inter Milan shirt just for this occasion. Yep. One of the greatest memories in my life is seeing this man for Inter Milan. It was a revelation. And I'm so happy to have Dre Cordero in the house and Michael Lahoud, of course, as we welcome everybody for the Serie A 2022-2023 season. Again, I remind you, on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports, it's going to be so exciting. All right, let's get straight into business, everybody. Basically, you know, before we even discuss any calcio tactics, anything about AC Milan defending, you know, the Scudetto and the contenders for the title once again, you know, let's have a little bit of a reminder, Dre, about some of the business that's been going on this summer. I mean, Paulo Dybala, of course, at Roma, Paul Pogba, you know, a bit the injuries at Juventus, of course, Lukaku returning to Inter Milan. I mean, AC Milan's been doing some business. Who do you think has done a really good job this summer regarding the Serie A situation?
Yeah, I would add Angel Di Maria at Juventus is another one of those big names that I think draws people in and can transform that team because they need somebody to be a playmaker. The team that I think has gotten the strongest over this transfer window, and this is always tricky, right, before a single ball has been kicked. So we could always, you know, eat our words at the midpoint of the season. But today it looks like Roma have substantially and significantly improved. There's a little bit of that Jose Mourinho's second season magic anticipation in the air. They improved last year, but they went from 7th to 6th, right? So from a Conference League spot to a Europa League spot. That's not a huge, huge jump. Roma have been outside of the top four for 4 consecutive seasons now. Not too long ago under Rudy Garcia, under Luciano Spalletti, they were seen as a number one contender to Juve's crown. I think they're inching closer to that now because they've signed not just quality, but quality depth, talent. Wijnaldum being the latest of those, I think adds to their midfield and doesn't even necessarily, I think he will start, but doesn't have to because they've already got pieces like Pellegrini, like Cristante, like Matic, who also joined in this summer transfer window. Adding Paulo Dybala is obviously the big headline, but I think Zeki Celik from Lille is a right back and right wing back who's going to push Karsdorp, who can compete for a starting spot. I see a team that is motivated by winning their first trophy in 14 years last year, the Conference League. It may just be, you know, the third tier European trophy, but it's a little taste of winning for a club that hasn't had it since the middle aughts, right? Since 2008, I want to say. So Mourinho's brought back that belief that Roma can win big things. And now they've got like a proper number 10, a proper star player, if Dybala is healthy and fit, that can make them compete with the likes of Inter and Milan.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that when you headline a transfer window with the likes of Paulo Dybala, I keep calling him Pablo, and I'm going to stop that. I'm just going to stop
that. Don't make that mistake, Michael. I'm going to stop that.
You guys just make me stop that. But hey. Paulo Dybala, sorry, his cousin Pablo, Paulo Dybala. But when you have a player like that, when you look at this Roma team, last season, it was about getting a trophy. It was the Mourinho masterclass of season one. I'm going to make you believe. I'm going to get everyone to buy into my philosophy about winning. And winning in the Mourinho way, defense first, having a striker who comes alive. We've seen this movie play out before at Chelsea. And now here's part two. You start getting that midfield. You start getting goals from midfield. And that's what I like that they've done in this summer window. Wijnaldum, when he's on, we've seen it for the Dutch national team, he is a goal-scoring midfielder. Liverpool, he scored crucial goals. Paulo Dybala, he is the X factor. When you're playing the Juves, when you're playing the Milans, when you're playing the Inters, he is that extra bit of magic that can unlock defenses in ways they didn't have last year. And I think they got it spot on this transfer window.
Yeah, just don't make him take corners, though, right? So I'm not trying to troll anybody right now, but that was a bit of a mistake. Well, there were some exits as well. Under Valtut and Paul Lopez, they all went to Marseille as well. Mkhitaryan, of course, became the permanent side there to Inter Milan. Carles Perez. But yes, Roma looking very good. Dre, if I was to push you again and ask you about a team that perhaps, and you make a good point, you know, we're really talking about it from a paper standpoint. Who knows what could happen eventually on the pitch, but who was not really doing a good job this summer? Who weakened, who looks pretty weak entering this match day one?
Yeah, I'm going to define weak as the team I have the most questions about, right? Because, again, a lot of players are coming in from leagues that I don't cover. In some cases, it's players who I haven't seen play before. So it could be an upgrade, and we just don't know about it. But Fiorentina are a team that just have a ton of question marks. Yes, they lost Vlahovic at the midpoint last season during the January transfer window. You know, tried a couple of pieces to replace him. Piontek, who's now gone, his loan spell ended. But I think there's so many new potential starters for that team, right? Starting with the goalkeeper, they've picked up Golini. Dodo is a new left back for them. They've lost Odriozola. They've lost Piontek, who I mentioned. Lucas Torreira was excellent for them. Rocco Commisso, the owner of Fiorentina, had reached an agreement with Arsenal to buy Torreira at the end of the season and then came back and tried to renegotiate, to go away from the original agreement, despite Torreira being a productive player for them, somebody who really set the tempo. He's gone. I think that's a big miss for them. I think Turkish Super League right now, if I'm not mistaken, like Galatasaray, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ospina, the changing goalkeeper with Golini, new left back in Dodo, Mandragora enters the midfield. Jovic is a player they're gambling on. You know, they've already tried two other options to try and fill the goals that Vlahovic gave them. That's a really tough ask for anybody. And Jovic has had a couple of disappointments outside of the Bundesliga. So I would say the team that is failed to get stronger on paper for the start of the season is Fiorentina. I've got them on the European bubble, like just outside, looking to break into that Conference League spot.
I'm going to go way south into southern Italy, Napoli. Holy moly. This team, it's like overnight, they became a team that finished third to a team where are you going to get your goals from? And they have Victor Osimhen. This guy is a star in the making, if not already an established star, and he'll only get better. He has all the tools to be successful in Serie A. But Victor Osimhen needs supply. Who's going to get him the ball? Are you just going to punt it from the goal? Oh, yeah, the goalkeeper's not even there. Ospina, gone. Insigne, gone. Bernardeschi's Juve.
No, yeah, just to recap everybody, but Kalidou Koulibaly left. Lorenzo Insigne went to Toronto, of course, Milic, and Tino, and to your point, David Ospina. So, yeah, absolutely, Napoli is one. They did bring some people in, though, Michael. Would you, Min-Jae Kim, the center back The guy whose name, I mean, Andrea Cordero, God bless you when you say his name, Kavicha Cavaracchellia. Yeah,
just Cavada. Just Cavada. he made it easy for all of us. He told us the proper pronunciation and then says, I go by Cavada. It's all right. Well,
God,
Cavada
God bless him, man. You owe him a few drinks when you see him in Italy. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
I think, look, it's good onus that knowing you're going to lose the caliber of players that they lost, that you have replacements, but it's not a one-for-one exchange with some of these players. These are some of the best players in Serie A in their positions for their national teams. These are players who won African Cup of Nations and captained their teams.
And I don't want to interrupt you again, but Des Norris, I apologize, Napoli fans, yes, Dries Mertens, of course, being the number one exit as well, Michael, a massive loss. But it's also about sort of Napoli leadership, Napoli experience that's leaving the pitch. That's a major thing, Andrea Cordero, don't you think? Because Napoli is a team that's renowned, you know, ever since obviously the Maradona days for, you know, grit and leadership and representing the city. Now you're going to kind of start all over again.
The greatest thing that Napoli have going for them right now is that Luciano Spalletti is a tremendous manager, right? And he's been in these situations before, be it at Roma, be it at Inter. I think he's a guy who usually gets the most out of his team more than some of their parts, and throw in whatever other cliche you want on the back end of that. But Spalletti's a proper good manager who I think can sort of galvanize this team. The con is a lot of talent left. And chief among that talent is Kalidou Koulibaly, who is, if not the best goalkeeper, center back in Serie A, certainly one or two over the course of the last four or five seasons, maybe his entire spell at Napoli. Say for his first season, it was the most bizarre thing. From season one to season two of Koulibaly, he went from being a mistake-prone center back to being an absolute lockdown defender, and he's like never relinquished that title since. So, there's a lot of question marks. We don't know how good Cavada is when it comes to replacing Dries Mertens, who's the all-time top scorer for Napoli. Yes, he'd become something of a super sub, but he was still banging in goals at the end of last season. Lorenzo Insigne was scoring more from the penalty spot than anywhere else, but he also was a creator, you know, who broke through lines with his dribbling, with his passes, who could drop deep to bring the ball forward. They might even lose Fabian Ruiz, right? There's some interest from Paris Saint-Germain, so it might not, the exodus might not be over for Napoli, and these aren't small pieces. These are key components to what make Napoli, as Mike was saying, a top three team and a contender for so many seasons.
Yeah, it's going to be really intriguing to see how they contend with our next topic of point, which is AC Milan. Because really, this is about Rossoneri defending the Scudetto, of course. Des Norris, I believe you have some odds on screen for this new season, for the 2022-2023 season. Obviously, we knew how good they were last season and how well they did. Now they're in the Champions League as well. So that's an added, of course, piece of homework for Pioli and his men. But let's just think a little bit about some of the players that left already, Mike LaHoud. Francesi is gone. Romagnoli is gone. Jans-Petter Haug is gone. Castillejo, Caldara. But they did bring in Origi and Messias, Florenzi, the kid Charles De Ketelaere, the attacking midfielder for 32 million euros. I mean, you know, so how do you assess AC Milan entering this this new season?
This is a Milan team that didn't light it up in terms of goal scoring in Serie A. So I think what led them to the title was the fact that you had contributions from midfield and contributions from the back. Look at their goal scoring leaders. Francesi finally getting off the mark in terms of becoming a goal scoring midfielder. For years, it was, what is he, a defensive midfielder? Is he a box-to-box midfielder? And he really took responsibility and stepping up offensively. Theo Hernandez, he's reborn. He's finally settling in into the player with a ton of potential that came from Real Madrid. And at times he captained the team. And was it Tonali, who playing Sandro Tonali, playing for midfield, scoring crucial goals late? When you replace Francesi, who goes to Barcelona, don't know why, we'll get on that another pod, but goes to Barcelona and you bring
unregistered.
Yeah.
So he might just... Listen, I'm going to the opening game in Barcelona this weekend. He might be sitting next to me. I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, we got to get LME Cam just in case we see him, Lewandowski, and the rest of the crew.
I'm pretty scared of him, so I don't really want to sit right next to him.
But what I like that they did in the transfer window is if you're going to lose an established midfielder, a player who is on the rise in Serie A last season and on the world stage, you have to bring goals from midfield. And I think that is what made this AC Milan team just a bit unpredictable. And if you stop Rafael Leal, who had a standout season last season, I mean, he scored 11 goals. like I said, it wasn't like this Milan team was dependent on one source of goals, but they had different sources from midfield and the back stepping up in big moments.
Yeah, there's it's an interesting thing with Milan because they are, I think, better, or at least on paper, than they were a year ago without adding much in the way of new starters, right? So Franchesi was an undisputed starter on that team. He leaves. Charles de Catellare comes in. Mm-hmm. He's expected to be an unquestioned starter on this team. They trade out a sort of box-to-box or central midfielder for a trequartista, number 10, which they really needed. I mean, Brahim Diaz at times was quite good, but was a little bit inconsistent. I think de Catellare brings some enthusiasm to that team, sort of a playmaker and goal scorer, somebody in the middle of the park that can create for the likes of Giroud and Ibrahimovic when he comes back. But I think the most significant thing that Milan did this transfer window, and it's not the sexiest thing, was re-signing Paolo Maldini. Did such a tremendous job rebuilding this team. Incredible scouting network, bringing players in that they can then, you know, sell for value afterwards, but not in the sense that Atalanta does, where you maybe hope to get into the Champions League. To win a title while rebuilding the way that Maldini was able to is just spectacular, to end the more than a decade-long drought to do that. So shoring up Maldini to me meant it's a continuation of the process. Hmm. They believe in the manager. Pioli last season was one of only two of the top seven in Serie A that repeated as manager. There were five changes in the top seven last year. This year, all of the top seven are coming back. Well, they believed in the Pioli project. They've believed in the Maldini project. They've added to that now with a player like De Catellare. They've added, I think, a bit of depth, which was much needed at center forward because it was looking a little bit geriatric with the likes of Ibrahimovic and Olivier Giroud, as good as Giroud was, especially at home last season. Divock Origi adds that little element. We can see if this is where he finally breaks out as a starter and a volume goal scorer. There's some questions, but if he doesn't, at least that's still some, you know, depth that you can bring in and somebody who can change the pace of a game and be the super sub that he was, for example, for Liverpool. So while I don't think they're starting 11 is transformed necessarily, I do think they're stronger, deeper, and if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? They're defending champions. Yes, Inter are stronger. Yes, Roma are stronger. But Milan, because of how good they were defensively, because of how well-coached they were under Pioli, and because it's a continuation of an already solid championship-winning project, have everything they need to try and repeat as Serie A champions.
When was the last time Milan had an out-and-out attacking midfielder and good things happen? Kaká, maybe? Good things happen with this AC Milan team and organization when they have a playmaker. You need to have a playmaker if you're going to compete in Serie A and Europe's bigger stage. I'm going to bring a stat to you. Milan, really good away from home last season. And I think that is the foundation of something good. To be a champion, to repeat as champions, you have to be, yes, home has to be a fortress, but you have to be able to play in some of the toughest places in Serie A. And Serie A, unlike a lot of other leagues, there are some really tough places where you can go and get beat any day of the week. 46 points, more points on the road than they got at home. And I think that's a fantastic stat for a team to defend their title.
Yeah, well said. And I think it goes back to Dre's original point, which it really begins with Pioli as well, you know, about, you know, just how, you know, you don't need to be this superstar squad to get things going. And Paolo Maldini, it's not the most important thing in the world, but he is AC Milan. I mean, he's just smooth and historically important and beautiful to look at. And AC Milan kind of need to be that as well, right? Dre, final point, and I go ahead.
On Milan, I don't want to go through a whole like Milan segment without mentioning last season's Serie A MVP, Rafael Leão, was just sensational. On a team that didn't have a lot of sort of dependable goal scorers, Leão, especially down the final stretch of the season.
Ballon d'Or potential kind of player.
He was electric. He was absolutely electric. And he's one of those players where you just, whether you were a Milan fan or not, you were excited to watch the Rosso that he played because you knew Leão was going to do something special. He was going to take on two, three guys, slalom into the area. And so I just want to see where he takes the next step because he's still a young player. The expectations there now, the eyeballs are on him now. He's got the sort of individual and collective accolades. So what's the next step for Rafael Leão? As you mentioned, he's a guy who could have Ballon d'Or potential. Is this the year that he takes that next step?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as well because there's a World Cup as well, going around that in between that for the Portuguese star. But we will see what happens. All right, well, let's talk about the contenders to AC Milan, the rest of last season's top four. Of course, let's begin with Inter Milan. And a certain Romelu Lukaku returns on loan from Chelsea. Didn't work out at Stamford Bridge. He's coming back. Joaquin Correa, by the way, as well, serving as a sort of second striker as well. Andre Onana, Aslani, and Mkhitaryan, of course, already, you know, confirming that free transfer. Dre, let's begin with you. Inter Milan, how important for both player and club is that Lukaku's coming back?
It's huge. I mean, they were really good last year with Dzeko and Lautaro Martinez as that tandem. In fact, I think they probably got more in year one of Edin Dzeko than they expected to when he was coming over from Roma. A really good hold-up play. Was a really good balance to Lautaro's sort of fluidity and just buzzing around all over the park. They had that reference point in Edin Dzeko who can hold the ball up, who can knock it down for wide players. But Lukaku is a game changer. He's not sort of a guy that plugs into the system. He's a guy that wreaks havoc on the opposition system. And we've seen time and time again, Serie A defenders in all over the world really just look exasperated trying to keep up with Romelu Lukaku. You're not supposed to be this big, this strong, this fast, and this technically gifted, right? Like, you're supposed to have certain weaknesses to your game. And in Serie A, Lukaku seems to have none when it comes to the attack. He single-handedly tore up Serie A defenses before leaving for Chelsea. Yes, it didn't work out in the Premier League, but Serie A seems to suit him. The pace of the game seems to suit him here. He seems to be operating fast on everybody else. Center backs look like they're running in shallow water when they're chasing Lukaku down the pitch. So I think his return gives them, you know, they were very close last year, right? It was 1-2 between Milan and Inter, and it went down to the final round of the season. Lukaku could very well be the guy that pushes them over the edge and returns the title to the other side of San Siro. The question I have, though, is Perisic was a huge, huge deal for them. Yeah. And yes, they do have somebody to replace him in Robin Gosens. Gosens was terrific at Atalanta. He was just coming back from injury last year, so we don't grade him, you know, too harshly. He didn't really play that much. Did get some appearances down the final stretch. But Perisic was like top three in goals, chances created.
Fabrizio Romano calls him one of the players of the season last year.
100%. On both sides of the ball, like when it came to pressures, when it came to recovery, when it came to buildup. So that is a big player to replace. Gosens is capable and can do it, but the guy who left did do it. And so there are, you know, that's the one question I have. Arturo Vidal's absence, they can deal with. He was not a substitute last year.
Yeah.
Same with Matias Vecino. Alexis Sanchez looks to be on his way out. He was actually electric, Alexis Sanchez, last year.
Yeah, he's a new player at Marseille.
He scored the Super Copa winning goal, if I'm not mistaken, to beat Milan in like the 122nd minute or something like that.
Yeah.
So there are some sort of depth guys that have moved on from Inter. But they're still starting 11, might be the strongest starting 11 in Serie A. Well coached by Inzaghi, who in year one made them every bit as competitive, maybe even a better attacking team than they were previously before his arrival. Lukaku is a big difference maker. Onana could maybe, you know, push Handanovic for that starting spot, create a little bit of competition. I think Handanovic is still a solid goalkeeper who probably, you know, anytime he makes a mistake, you get the knives out and people start pointing the finger. But he's been so good for so long that I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt. So Inter in the conversation. Lukaku makes them significantly better, but there are some questions in the wide areas if they can't hold on to Dumfries, if Gosens doesn't turn out to be the heir apparent to Perisic.
Yeah, when I start with Lukaku, I agree with everything you said, Dre. And when you look at Romelu Lukaku thrives under a manager who gives him belief. And Inzaghi's played or coached a prolific goal scorer before he got to Milan or Inter in Immobile. So that should bode well for Lukaku and Inter Milan, where can Inzaghi still become the striker whisperer? Because they're going to need it. With Edin Dzeko, although he started the season in electric form, and it was Edin Dzeko that was carrying this Inter Milan team, not Martinez. Martinez got going in the second half of the season and could not stop scoring. But prior to that, he literally could stand at the edge of the Atlantic Ocean and couldn't score. And that's just a striker's world. What I saw with Edin Dzeko, yes, although he was getting minutes here and there, I don't think he scored he scored one goal in his last 13 appearances in Serie A. That is the difference between winning a title and not winning a title. Your strikers still have to score. Your attacking players still have to score. And when you get Romelu Lukaku, if you can get those extra goals down the stretch late from him, then you have a team that wins a title. And with Perisic and Dumfries, attacking wingbacks is crucial to how this Inter team plays. And you can't understate that. You see it in Coppa Italia with how they play. They stretch you wide with the wingbacks. They push really high up, but then that allows numbers. Mkhitaryan, he could be a difference maker, adding another creative element out of midfield. Brozovic, love this guy. So composed, gives them just the platform for so many numbers to get for Çalhanoğlu, having another good season. So this Inter team really intrigues me, and I think they're a worthy contender, the real contender, to pip Milan to the title.
They didn't add the one guy they wanted to add. They wanted to add Bremer. Bremer went to Juventus instead at the last minute, right? Inter thought they had him locked up. They were almost ready. I'd heard from Inter sources, they were ready to announce him within like a week's time. And then Juve jump in and they end up snatching him up. We'll talk about Juve in a moment. But not getting him meant keeping Milan Skriniar. Because I think had they signed Bremer, Skriniar would be in a PSG shirt right now. And yeah. So Skriniar has been, along with Koulibaly, one of the two best center backs in Serie A for a long, long time, especially when it comes to 1v1. Like, you're not dribbling past Milan Skriniar at any point during the season. And so keeping him, keeping Bastoni, who is arguably the best young center back in Serie A, certainly the best young Italian center back in the world right now, could they have maybe added another, you know, piece that they've got the likes of D'Ambrosio. They've got pieces that they can put in that are really fullbacks that can fill in as center backs. So De Vrij is still there as a starter. Maybe could have made that a little bit stronger, but it still brings back that solid three of, you know, Skriniar, De Vrij, Bastoni. Brozovic was going to be out of contract. So signing him to an extension was going to be huge. And I think just as big, a guy who probably isn't going to be starting is Henrik Mkhitaryan. Because, yes, Calhanoglu's been good, Barella's been good, but there were times last season when Barella looked absolutely spent. Maybe that had something to do with playing the Euros previously, but every other week it was something in the Gazzetta or wherever about, you know, Barella looks tired, needs to rest. Oh, now you have a Mkhitaryan who can give the likes of Hakan Calhanoglu a spell on the bench, Barella a spell on the bench, Brozovic a spell on the bench.
Yeah, yeah. And let's not forget as well, Inter brought in, regarding that centre-back situation, Andrea Gavilon, the Guadeloupe centre-back from Stade Reims as well. You made a nice segue about Juventus, Dre Cordero. And Juventus fans, I apologise if you're angry, but you did not win Serie A last season, so we didn't begin with you for once in your life. Get over it. But we talk about Juventus right now. Let's talk about this business here, Mike LaHoud. It's been very interesting, obviously, the exits. Yeah. Matthias de Ligt, of course, to Bayern Munich. Dybala, we've already mentioned, Demiral as well, Mandragora, and Bernadeschi as well, that also went to Toronto as well. But incoming, Chiesa, of course, we already made that, a permanent move. Paul Pogba, unfortunately, dealing with an injury now. Dre mentioned Bremer, the centre-back from Torino. Angel Di Maria as well, Dre mentioned as well, one of the, you know, free transfer from PSG, El Fideo getting there. Andrea Cambiasso as well, the left-back. So how would you assess Juventus as they enter this very important season, I really believe, because I really want this Scudetto back, possibly more than anybody else. How'd you make Juventus this summer and how they look into the new Serie A campaign?
This is a Juve team that the manager is putting his stamp on the team. I think prior to him coming in, it was chaotic. They had so many talented players, so many players that were attached to that Euro-winning Italy team. And now it's a team that you almost don't even recognize. The biggest signing that they've made is Angel Di Maria. This guy gets older and he just continues to get better. And he's rediscovering his form. I think his play on the Argentinian national team is really sparked life back into his career. Last season, thought he was electric for PSG. And good for him for getting out of the French capital and getting into a team where he will be the focal point. They have a young striker in Vlahovic. Will they get Morata back? Who knows? But I actually think it could benefit Vlahovic now that you have a winger who will supply crosses, who will get to the end line, unlike last season where they had wide players who weren't really wide players. Rabiot playing wide in that 4-4-2 system. Now you have a winger who will get wide and cross balls in the box. Strikers love service. Strikers like Vlahovic, goal scorers, need service, and they have Di Maria. With all those defenders going out, all those, you know, De Ligt, Chiellini at LAFC, it puts a lot of pressure on Brenner to hit. They need him to hit. In preseason, he's had a couple shaky moments, as new players sometimes do. But once that first whistle blows in Serie A, he has to hit because there's no other option.
Yeah, Bremer was Torino's all-time record sale, right? Torino have not traditionally sold like big blockbuster numbers. So the fact that a center back is the historic all-time transfer fee for Torino tells you this is a big jump in quality for Bremer, from the expectations of the Stadio Olimpico in Turin to the expectations of Juventus Stadium in Turin, that's a heavy shirt. It's absolutely massive. I don't know, something about the black and white stripes. It's very, very heavy, as Meg LaHoud was alluding to. And so, Bremer, who has been brilliant because he genuinely was one of the top center backs in Serie A last season.
Center back.
When they played Juventus, Bremer put Vlahovic in his pocket and never let him out. So yeah. I can understand why they were very eager to bring him along, and nobody's happier to see him on this team.
Yeah, you can't beat them, join them.
train against him, but not have to play against him.
Right.
The problem for Juve is that they're going to start the season pretty banged up, right? Paul Pogba is injured, opting not to have surgery because of the upcoming World Cup. Could that be potentially a long-term problem for the old lady? Federico Chiesa is still probably a couple months from making his return, certainly at least several weeks from making a debut. And Weston McKennie had, I think, a shoulder problem to start the year, right? So you don't want to fall behind when you know that there's all this enthusiasm and all this quality now at Milan, at Inter. Juve can't afford to have another rough start. And last season, to call it rough, was really underselling it because it was an historically bad start to the season under Max Allegri last year. They cannot afford to dig themselves in that deep a hole where they were outside of the top four for a big chunk of the first half of the season. They have reinforced the team well. When Pogba is healthy again, Pogba is iconic to this Juventus team. Pogboom, originated when he was banging in goals from outside the box for Juve on a midfield with Andrea Pirlo and the much younger Arturo Vidal. So his return, gives them a ton of enthusiasm, a ton of hope and expectation. Di Maria, as Mike says, is just a straight baller and playmaker, a guy who's going to break through lines, who can play wide, who can play through the center. You're right to say that their wing play last season, Bernardeschi at the end of the year was okay. By the way, I was tempted when you asked me at the top of this, who was the most improved team in Serie A? I was going to this close to saying Toronto FC with Lorenzo Insigne, Bernardeschi, Ishito
are going over. I mean, they are basically an Italian team. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That aside, Kostic, I think, is a player who also creates chances. Especially with Chiesa gone, early part of the season, Kostic on that left wing, whether they're playing, three at the back and have him as a wing back, or four at the back and have him as a winger or left back, which Allegri could infuse some improvements in both fullback spots, I think. Kostic adds something, Pogba adds something. They've got a couple of young midfielders that if they show some faith in them and give them some playing time, whether it's Fagioli, Rovella, Miretti, who looked good at the end of last season, could fill in with the injuries of Pogba and McKennie early on. But it's important to sort of weather that early storm with those absences and not fall behind. There's also some talk of two players who could join. Leandro Paredes from Paris Saint-Germain and Memphis Depay from Barcelona. Memphis would theoretically be a free transfer. Barca need to make that happen. They need to slash the wage budget. Memphis Depay is an absolute baller. And if you're judging him based on what you saw at Manchester United when he was young, you're probably a little bit misguided because he was tearing up Ligue 1 with Lyon. And last year on a fairly, let's say slightly better than mediocre Barcelona team, he was their top scorer. He was the one guy you can count on to make things happen in attack. If you put Memphis, who can play as a 10 or can play as a winger, buzzing around the box, playing around Vlahovic, taking some of that attention away from their number nine, that could be a really lethal combination. And if your front four would be Di Maria, Chiesa, Vlahovic, and Memphis, now you're talking about potentially a Scudetto contending team again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I don't ever want anybody to discount Memphis's work with the Dutch national team, which is really where you see everything. But absolutely, Dre, that's a really tasty forward line for Juventus. But time will tell if it will happen. Fantastic stuff, everybody. We're going to take a break. When we come back, much more to discuss, including, some other teams of interest, of course. Jose Mourinho's Roma, we mentioned, but maybe Lazio has something to say here. The promoted three, by the way, because Berlusconi is back to Serie A. And then we'll do our predictions, and that will be it. Our Serie A 2022-2023 preview with Dre Cordero, Michael Lahoud, LME. We'll be right back.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Che Golazzo Serie A exclusively on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports. Paramount Plus is the only place to stream every minute of every Serie A match, and you can quickly and easily sign up for your very own account right now with a free one-month trial by going to paramountplus.com/Italy. Just click the Try It Free button and use promo code Italy for instant access to the best Italian club soccer available across all your devices. Visit paramountplus.com/Italy and start streaming today. Remember, I said Italy, not Italia. I know that some of you want to say Italia, but no, you got to say Italy. All right, but make sure that you check it out. Paramount Plus. All right, let's keep going here. Let's talk about some other teams that we want to discuss here. Dre Cordero, where do you want to go? We can talk about Roma. Can Jose Mourinho build on that Conference League success, that he did last season? Of course, we discussed about some of the incomings. Lazio, maybe, Fiorentina, Atalanta. Where do you want to go?
We could do a whole hour, I think, on just Roma. Just Roma and what they've done this season. Let's just Jose Mourinho. Just to add to your little promo, by the way, Paramount Plus, you can watch the Beavis and Butthead movie. You can watch Paw Patrol. And you can watch the Italian Serie A. Honestly, hey, what more do you need? Dave,
how dare you not mention Keenan and Kel, by the way?
I agree. I'm so pumped for this season, man. And Roma's a big part of it. Roma being good again is good for Serie A. Mourinho being, you know, at the top of European football.
Arrogant, cocky Mourinho is good for the game.
He just looks happy. Honestly, from the moment he arrived, he looks younger. He looks fresh. I don't know if it's the food, the fresh pasta that he's having in the Italian capital. But Mourinho looked happy last season, and it culminated in Roma's first trophy in 14 years. You know, it is just a Conference League, but it's something to build on for year two. And in year two, I think fans can rightfully expect silverware. Mourinho's got talent on this team now. Paulo Dybala, you saw the reception that Dybala got in the Italian capital. You saw
absolutely
the reception
ridiculous
that Wijnaldum got in the Italian capital. Like this is the most buzz this team has had since, you know, a less than 40-year-old Francesco Totti was out there wearing the number 10. So I think it, for a team that have been, and pardon this expression, but have been sort of lovable losers in much of their Serie A existence, right, with one trophy back in 2001 in the Battistuta days. They have a huge fan base. They have an incredible culture. They've got merch. Listen, they sell merch, but Roma are a team that world renowned, right? Despite not a lot of success compared to Milan, to Inter, to Juventus. Well, now they've got a squad to compete with those. I think they've got depth. I think their starting 11 is as good as anybody. They're still, you know, their defense is more strength in numbers, I think. Mancini is decent. Smalling is okay. Roger Ibanez is fine. So I think it's sort of greater than the sum of their parts. They're more adventurous with Mourinho. People still have this perception of Jose Mourinho as being an ultra-defensive manager who's parking the bus. That's not the case with Roma. They create a ton. They shoot a ton from distance. Tammy Abraham was absolutely on fire last year. He's got service behind them. We'll see whether they keep Zaniolo, because there's been some interest in him. He's been good. He's been healthy again. But they've got these playmakers to play off of Tammy Abraham now, whether it's Zaniolo, Paulo Dybala, obviously chief among them. Lorenzo Pellegrini is one of the best Italian, you know, number 10s, trequartista, playmakers, whatever you want to call it. He can also play in central midfield. So if you wanted to go with like an all-out attacking lineup, you've got, you know, Pellegrini in central mid with Wijnaldum, Dybala, Zaniolo, and Tammy Abraham as your front three. It's an exciting team that also gets some attack from the wings with Spinazzola, who's healthy again. Spinazzola was injured at the Euros, missed virtually the entirety of last season. But before the injury, Spinazzola looked like the best player on the Italian national team. He was playing at that level. I mentioned at the top, Zeki Celik is a player who maybe fans aren't that accustomed to, but having covered Ligue 1 previously, loved watching him at Lille. He is more of a sort of more defensive-minded, I think, than what they have in Rick Karsdorp, but can still get forward, and I think will challenge Karsdorp for a starting place. And so Roma, I believe, are the most improved team. Obviously have a manager with a ton of pedigree, have a go-to number nine, a go-to goal scorer in Tammy Abraham. All the ingredients are there, man. He just has to cook the right, you know, the right dish.
Yeah, I love this Roma team, and just watching them play in the Conference League final, they got a game. They got a game from Feyenoord in the second half. But seeing Zaniolo scoring that game-winning goal, he's a player that's been talked about with having so much potential. And now, because he delivered late last season, injury woes have been his undoing, though. So can he stay healthy, and can he stay on the books? He's a player that I think Roma's said to him, if no one comes and buys you and puts in an offer that we like, they're going to try and re-sign him to an extension at the, I think, maybe September or early September or late September. So that could be a difference maker for them in how can they compete, maybe Coppa Italia. I see really that trophy is the next evolution of Jose Mourinho. Can you get a domestic cup to put to this Roma name and to his chapter here. I'm going to go to the other side of the capital, though, Lazio. This is a Lazio team that no one is talking about, well, because they really haven't done that much in the transfer window. But this is a Lazio team that has some ballers. Milinkovic-Savic, please, if you're watching the show, I know you're watching, so I'm going to talk directly to you and your agent. Come to United, please. Let's just get that out of the way. All right, Ten Hag, I'm doing your job for you.
Wants to develop his career, Michael.
We'll pay you in whatever you want. That's all we say.
Frankie, I don't think money's the issue anymore with Man United.
Actually, save yourself. Don't come. Yeah, don't come. Exactly. Don't come. Stay. No, this is a player who just gets better and better and really has endeared himself to the Lazio fan base and to Italian soccer. I watched him play at the U20 World Cup when he really announced himself with Serbia, and he's just gotten better and better. One of the key figures that will be in that Serbia midfield and that Serbia team in Qatar this winter, and a guy who's just found form again. Who'd have thought Pedro, like this guy could not stop scoring acrobatic goals, amazing goals. He just really under Maurizio Sarri really just continues to display some of the form and some of the big moments. But Ciro Immobile, this is a guy who's a proven goal scorer in Serie A. When I look at Lazio, though, outside of Milinkovic-Savic, their leading assist getter last season, also double digits in goals. Pedro, I think, had 9 goals. Immobile, this guy, I mean, just almost 20 goals per season the last 5 seasons. Felipe Anderson, that's a player that needs to hit even more. Last season, he had some big moments. Inconsistency is what's plagued the Brazilian talent. On his day, he's a world beater. It's why West Ham paid big bucks for him. It's also why he's back in Lazio and back in Rome.
He suffered the same issues at West Ham. Exactly. Yeah. The same inconsistencies that he suffered. Dre, quickly on Lazio, but also just a note on Atalanta as well, because you mentioned some players that left the club as well. How are both looking as a look from the outside? And
yeah, this has worked neatly, this little cluster of teams now, because I think of Lazio, Fiorentina, and Atalanta as those teams that are on the bubble, competing for those like last Europa League spots, trying not to finish in the Conference League spot, trying not to finish outside of the European picture altogether. There's questions about all of them. Lazio have an entirely new defense, to a new center back, to a new goalkeeper, and a new defensive midfielder. So that's some questions. Maurizio Sarri's system takes some time to figure out and to play properly. The burden of proof is on them because they want to have the ball and they want to be attack-minded. Questions there. Questions about Fiorentina, who have potentially 4 new starters on their team with Vincenzo Italiano, having some questions about their attack in the absence of Vlahovic. Can Jovic be that guy? Golini new there, Mandragora into the midfield. But I think Atalanta last year was the exception and not the rule, right? So we look at a team that under Gasperini had been transformed. Before Giampiero Gasperini arrived, the guy who Jose Mourinho said is the toughest manager he'd ever faced when Mourinho was at Inter, I believe, and Gasperini was at Genoa because of his game planning, because of the versatility of his teams. Atalanta have been just legitimately fun, but also legitimately good for the entirety of Gasperini's spell there, from a team that had never made the Champions League to a team that was finishing perennially on the Serie A podium. Forget top 4, they were finishing top 3 in Serie A with Gasperini. There won't be Champions League football for them this year because last year was a down year. And it's not as if they've made, wholesale changes to the 11. By my count, I think only one new starter from the players they've picked up, and that's going to be Ederson, who probably slots into that trequartista role behind the likes of Milanovski and Zapata. We'll see if Luis Muriel sticks around. I'm not sure if – I know that other teams have wanted him. Juventus have been sniffing around of late. But I think the fact that they've managed to hold on to their starting 11, potentially improve it with the addition of Ederson, if I'm right and last year was the exception and not the rule, then they should be back in contention for the top 4. But other teams got them better, whereas they – haven't necessarily done so. So how much do we bridge that gap between Atalanta were better than they showed last year? If they're back to their good self, are they good enough to keep up with Milan, who are better, Inter, who are better, Juve, who should be better? That only leaves one, Roma, who are better. There are not that many other places in the top 4. These teams all hit. Atalanta's on the outside looking in.
Yeah, so maybe a good cup run as well might help Atalanta as well, the Atalanta fans, to see what they can do in this new season. All right, well, we're nearly finished here, but I wanted to just do a fun quick thing on the promoted teams, everybody. I wanted one fun thing from both these fine gentlemen to discuss. Monza, by the way, Berlusconi is back. The former Prime Minister of Italy is back with his club, Lecce as well, and Cremonese. So, Mike, where do you want to go? One fun thing about any of these. What can you tell our Qué Golazo faithful regarding these promoted teams?
I'll start with Lecce. Lecce won Serie B last season, and they were a team that were really – their offense and their attack are off the shoulders of two attackers. They had Massimo Coda, who scored 20-plus goals and really was their focal point striker, who can drop down as a false nine. He can, you know, his ability to arrive in the box and just the quality and execution in the final third. And also Gabriel Strefeza, Brazilian, you know, with Italian heritage. He's a tricky winger, can get wide, can be play inverted, can kind of use either foot. So those two players really, really intrigued to see how they impact or what their impact is on Serie A this season. And, you know, they were dominant at home. So could they get a couple points off of some of the bigger names in Serie A?
One fun thing, and then you start with Berlusconi. I see what you did. That's a perfect little transition.
I have to, my friend. How could you not, right?
Bonga's back in Serie A. Also, it dawned on me that Lecce and Cremonese sound like things that your barista puts into your espresso.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And are probably...
Lecce.
Cremonese.
Easy on the Cremonese. Yeah.
Exactly. Only on Sundays.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So Berlusconi being back in Serie A, it should be wildly entertaining. I think one of the fun things about this league is that it does tend to be a bit of an ayahuasca trip when you see some of the antics by the owners, some of the, you know, craziness, the personalities around this league. I think of the former Genoa president, Preziosi, had been banned from going to the stadium. So he put a cardboard cutout of himself in the president's box. I remember De Laurentiis got into a fight with a journalist outside of the Maradona Stadium. He smashed the journalist's camera and he jumped onto a stranger's passing Vespa and sped off with a random, but we've got these like incredible personalities in Serie A, and none bigger, more bombacious than the former prime minister, and who, by the way, is the richest owner in Serie A. The richest ownership right now, currently in Serie A, it's not at Inter, it's not at Juventus with the Agnelli family, it's Berlusconi and Monza promoted to Serie A. And it's one of the reasons that I think they're going to stay up. Of those three teams, they're by far the most likely to stay up. If you look at the bookies' odds on relegation, Cremonese and Lecce are 1-2 to go back down. Then you get Salernitana, a tie between Empoli and Spezia, Sampdoria. We're already at 7 teams before we get to Monza being the 7th most likely to be relegated based on the bookie odds at the start of the season. That's because not only do they have the funds to revamp the squad, they're going to bring in 9 new starters from the team that played in Serie B last season, right? And two of those guys I really, really like, Pessina and Sensi. These are ball-playing midfielders who want to create for others, who have done it on bigger teams in Serie A, will now be doing it for a promotion team. So they may not play like you typically see from a promotion team that's going to be a little bit more reserved. They may actually go after the opposition. Caprari, I think, was a good addition to their attack as well. Some questions in defense. Ranocchia wasn't the fastest player ever, and now is going to anchor that back line. So, you know, they're not going to, I don't think, compete for, you know, top six or anything along those lines, but they should safely remain in Serie A, because if it's not working out, they have the funds to then go into the January transfer window, reinforce where needed, and go and get those points. So I think Monza is a good team to keep an eye on this year, not just because of Berlusconi, but also Pessina, Sensi. They should be fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one note about Cremonese, by the way. The president is Paolo Rossi, the 1982 World Cup hero. So that should be a fun little thing for them as well. This has been so great. Let's end it on a high, everybody, or on a low, depending on what teams these two pick. But we're going to do our quick predictions here. I mean, listen, you can change your mind throughout that, especially Drey Cordero. I mean, he's our play-by-play guy. I'm sure that you can, you know, educate us as the season goes along. So this is just our beginning, our sort of like our gut instinct predictions to see where we want to go. So let's begin, Mike LaHood, with the champion. Who's winning this whole thing? And you don't need to give me a big explanation in this, by the way, in the predictions. Just tell me who do you think, and then we move on. Who do you have?
Inter Milan.
Inter Milan
Inter number one. The shortest explanation. I know I don't give many on this show, but shortest explanation. They address the problem that they had late in the run-in, that they're two-prong horse in attack now. They have a second goal scorer outside of one of the most prolific strikers in Serie A from last season. So Romelu Lukaku is the answer.
Inter Milan and Lukaku. Who do you have, Dre?
Inter. They're you know, well-coached. They're hungry. They watched their rivals win last season. After Inter ended a 10-year drought, Milan ended a 10-year drought. They bring back Lukaku. They've got two guys up top who can challenge for Capo Cannonieri, although they'll take goals from each other. So Inter, to me, looked like on paper, match day one, the strongest team.
Yeah, why do you think I'm wearing this whole thing? I'm in agreement with you, boys. So
I realize, by the way, I've got to step up my shirt game because between Michael and you wearing the Ronaldo thing, like next time.
Nah, my friend, you look good as always. All right, we have the champions. We have all predicted Inter Milan. All right, top four, though, after Inter Milan, who are those other remaining three spots? Dre, let's begin with you. Who's your top four? Inter's number one. Yeah. What's two, three, and four?
I'm afraid we're going to... be in agreement again, but I'm going Inter, Milan, Roma, and Juve, and I'm putting it in that order. I see Roma leapfrogging Juventus and Napoli and others into the podium.
Wow, Mike.
I'm just Inter.
Yep.
Roma.
Yep.
Juve.
Yep.
And Milan.
Wow.
I think Milan gets fourth. Just lots to still be seen from this Milan team.
There's a lot of love for Jose Mourinho, though.
Put your money on Napoli, I think, right now.
For Napoli, that's right. I'm in agreement, but I think mine switches a little bit. I do have Inter Milan, obviously, as we mentioned. I think that Juventus is going to come. And also, depending on what the incomings come before the end of the transfer window, that could be impactful. I have Roma third and AC Milan fourth. I think we're all in agreement. Napoli's going to really suffer through all those exits as well. Let's talk about, this is an interesting one. We've talked about, of course, Immobile, Lukaku returning, of course, Dusan Vlahovic. What can he do in his first full season for Juventus? Victor Osimhen back to being healthy. Who do you have as your golden boot winner, Mike Lahoud? Who do you have?
Lautaro Martinez. I love this guy. You see the quality he brings for Argentina, and he's an assassin in the final third. And before it was, is he going to be a playmaker? This is his team. Lukaku's come along for the ride. Before it was Lukaku's team, Conte established that. But this is Martinez's team. And Romelu, come on, bud. We're going to have a fun season. That's what he's going to say.
All right. You have Lautaro Martinez, who, by the way, has Argentinian responsibility at the end of November as well. Dre, who's your golden boot winner?
Yeah, I think Lautaro and Lukaku are going to score, you know, just bags of goals over the course of the season. But when it comes to who's going to win the Capocannonieri, they're probably going to take some goals from each other and kind of level things out a little bit. So I look at Vlahovic as the guy who's most likely to challenge Immobile's crown, because let's not be disrespectful to Ciro Immobile. Yeah. He may not be performing for the Italian national team. Italians may not love him because of that, but he is one title after title when it comes to most goals in Serie A.
There's no World Cup for Italy, Dre Cordero, so he'll be able to rest as well.
You have to remind the Italians.
I'm sorry. Hey, I'm Peruvian, so I'm not trolling anybody. We're like this now, so don't worry about that.
I wasn't going to say it. I'm glad you did. sad to see Gareca not resign, by the way. We'll do a different plot at some other time.
Don't make me cry. Come on.
I think Vlahovic there with Di Maria providing the service, with Chiesa eventually coming back. If they get Memphis, that's another playmaker and goal scorer. If they get Paredes, it's another guy who can drive the ball forward for them. And so I do think Immobile is absolutely in the conversation, but Vlahovic with a real point to prove, because he was not what they expected in the second half of last year. He was absolutely lights out for Fiorentina first half of the year. They got better service. They were a team that played in the opposition's half more. I think Allegri's going to have to be more adventurous, more attack-minded, but if he is that, then Vlahovic has a very good shot.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with this. I think Dusan Vlahovic has a chip on his shoulder. I think he wants to come to this full season with Juventus, wanting to show that he is that goal scorer that everybody remembered him at Fiorentina. I think both your points regarding El Fideo, giving more assists, etc. And I think that, a full campaign, a full preseason under Allegri is going to help him. And I think the World Cup will have a lot to say about this. I think that, it's going to be some tired legs all over the place. And even I want to say Tammy Abraham, but I feel that it might just not be enough. I think Dusan Vlahovic also gets the golden boot, not for me. All right, here's a fun one because it's Serie A, it's Italy. It has to happen. Berlusconi's back as well. So, we're going to have extra madness. Who is the first manager who's going to get fired, Dre Cordero? Who do you think?
It's Cremonese's Max Alvini, Massimiliano Alvini, who it's a weird thing with Cremonese because they get promoted under Fabio Pecchia, and Pecchia dips. He's like, no Serie A for me, thank you. And he just takes off. They couldn't reach an agreement. And that, to me, signals a team that is the most likely to be relegated in Serie A. Managerial change, so it's the start of a new project. Previous manager wanted nothing to do with their Serie A exploits. I don't know that their reinforcements have a ton of sort of top flight quality. And so it's not, really an indictment on Alvini. He's just in a very difficult situation where if they're looking like a likely relegation contender at around the midpoint of the season, he doesn't make it to Christmas.
I'm going to go Monza. Giovanni Stoppa. When you have the former prime minister of Italy, when you have a guy who he's back in Serie A and you know he's going to want to stick it to his former club, AC Milan, and really stick it to everyone across the Italian peninsula, you know that there's going to be a bit of a circus. And when you start spending money, when there's desperate, when say as teams coming up experience, things go wrong. There's always a period where it gets a little tough and there's a bit of uncertainty. And he starts taking more of a presence in transfer dealings and whatnot. As a manager, it becomes a headache. And he's no stranger to pulling the trigger and saying, nah, ciao. So I'm going to pick Storpa for Monza.
All right. Well, there was a little bit of a conversation in this preview amongst three of us regarding Fiorentina and how they might struggle. And I got to say, I'm not completely convinced on how Vincenzo Italiano is going to do. He did some good things with Spezia, but I think this is a different type of responsibility with this historic club who has already lost a key star already last season. If they don't start well and things get going worse after that, I think he could be the first one to go. All right, let's go to the next one. By the way, the last one. Well, the relegation battle. What do you have? Who's getting relegated? And we can be free with this. We can talk between, you know, that 17th and 18th place. Mike Lou, who do you have being relegated?
I'm just keep it simple. All three teams that got promoted. That's what it seems like in Serie A. So you're always a safe bet. So I'm just going to keep it simple with that.
So you come up, you go straight down.
Hey, look, the Serie B, it's the elevator pitch. You come up in the elevator and it's, hey, there's champagne waiting for you. And everyone else in Serie A outside of Salernitana, good for them. They were the Hollywooders last season, have knives behind their back, ready to send you back down. So I expect all three to go right back down.
Mike hangs out with way cooler people than I do. I've never gotten champagne on the elevator on the way up. No, I've been asked to push the buttons. I've got two of the newcomers going back down, Cremonese and Lecce, just as the bookies do. But then for me, Salernitana last season were such a good story because they looked, I think we would have said, you know, lock to go down at the midpoint, at the start of the season, at the midpoint of the season, Salernitana were relegated, and they pulled off the most incredible escape down the final stretch. Just genuinely impressive against tough competition, and they stayed up. I don't see them doing that again. And so I'm going Cremonese, Lecce, and Salernitana back to Serie B.
I think I'm with you. Aside from that last one, again, just like I was talking about my worries for Italiano, I don't know about Luca Gotti's journey here with Spezia. They could be one that finally bites the dust here. But it is an intriguing battle in the relegation zone for Serie A this season, I believe. I think it's going to be about, you know, five teams that are really going to be fighting for it. But we all want Monza to stay, surely. We want Berlusconi, just craziness. Just all these stories, Dre, that you kept telling through the preview, we need to keep them going because it's just too good. I love it so much. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for being part of this preview. Please take a minute to leave a rating and review for your favorite pod. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you listen to your podcast. We're also available as video, as you'll know. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Visit YouTube, of course. This has been an absolute fantastic preview. I love it. Mike LaHood, thank you so much. Final thoughts, my friend. What do you have?
Oh, I am just, I've been saying the last couple of weeks, I'm just excited to see the rest of European football. Serie A, it is a league, and I'll keep it to this point, is a league that it's good to see it rejuvenated. This brings me back to the nostalgia of when I fell in love with the world's game and really on the European front. It wasn't just the Premier League having competition. It was really seeing Italian teams competing in Serie A, but also in Europe. That's the next step for Serie A and Calcio. So can't wait for the season.
I love it. Dre Cordero, is always a pleasure to have you, the absolute voice of Paramount Plus and CBS Sports when it comes, well, qualifiers as well, as we all know, but Serie A, baby. Final thoughts before we say goodbye.
Yeah, that this was absolutely delightful, that we need to stay in touch during the course of the season, that there will be plenty of stories to share about owners, players, and teams. Listen, I've had the privilege in my career to cover everything from Major League Soccer to the Africa Cup of Nations to La Liga, Ligue 1. Serie A is just consistently entertaining. Whatever you think of the level, whatever your preconceived notions are of this defensive-minded league from the 1990s that had all these stars and whatnot, it's evolved, baby. Things change, things fall apart and come back together. And right now, Serie A is as entertaining, as fun, in terms of the goals, the personalities, the quality of the games, the fight for the title, the fight for the Champions League places. It is going to be the most fun you'll have this season in Serie A. I promise it. And there's only one way to know that is to watch us.
Absolutely. On Paramount Plus and CBS Sports, the more managers that jump on scooters and Vespas, the better for the game. Drake Cordero, at Drake Cordero, make sure you follow him on Twitter and, of course, Paramount Plus and our CBS Sports coverage of Serie A, which begins this weekend. Make sure that you tune in. Mike LaHood, at Mike LaHood, make sure to follow him. My only final thought is I need a Peruvian back in Serie A. I love the days of Loco Vargas at Fiorentina. Let's get La Padula now that he's with Cagliari to come back up. Let's do it, baby. But absolutely, completely correct. I fell in love with this league in the 90s, and that energy, that vibe is definitely back, and you can only watch it on CBS Sports and, of course, Paramount Plus. Mike LaHood, Drake Cordero, LME, have a fantastic rest of your week. Enjoy some calcio and see you next time. Till then.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.